Hi, welcome to Coach Your Brains Out. This is part two of our conversation with Chris Geeter McGee.
Every great team I've ever had, there's always been one set of parents or a couple that weren't that happy. Now, the funny thing is their kid was happy. Their kid enjoyed being on the team, but the parents were not. It was never easy. I never had a perfect season all the way through where everywhere it was all kids and candles the whole time. Never. And you know what? I don't want it that way. I want to have battles. I want to have fights. I want to get through tough times. I want to get my ass kicked. I want to come out on the other side, and I want to come out better for it. And I think that's a big problem because they don't allow it to happen. You know, now you get fired if you lose after a year.
From our message board, Coach Jackson, he asks, what do you do if a parent is not buying in?
Ooh, that's a tough one, man. I've faced it many times, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it for you and say that it always worked out because it didn't. You know, I can go all the way back to my first ever basketball team at Campbell Hall, middle school, high school. Tim Jensen got me my first job. I was actually still taking some classes at the Ridge. My eligibility was up. It was 94, 95. And I was the head coach of the seventh grade boys basketball team. And they had come off a championship in sixth grade. Well, I don't know if you guys know this, but when you go from sixth to seventh, it's a little bit different. All of a sudden you're playing some different teams in your junior high. Kids are a little bit bigger. And we had to battle. And these kids were like stars in sixth grade. Well, they came to seventh. And, you know, I'm 23, 24 years old, and I'm trying to run a system in seventh grade hoops and trying to teach himself. And I had a dad that pulled me aside and he was like, hey, I coach these kids in summer league. Why don't you come hang out with me for Saturday? You know, I'm going to teach you our offense. And I kind of fell into this trap, right? And this guy wanted to be my best friend. And he was showing me plays and took me to UCLA hoops games. And his son was the point guard. And he was like, do it this way. And I started thinking to myself, that's kind of not how I want to do it, but I'll kind of sprinkle some of his stuff and I'll do mine as well. And I'll never forget, we got to a game and we were playing Harvard-Westlake, and it was a small, tiny gym and it was packed. And it was the most intense situation that I still remember to this day, guys. My dad was at the game. I remember that. My dad came to the game and watched, and I'll never forget. We still talk about it today, but I'll never forget the high intensity of it and these parents going nuts, dude. It was like gymnast at the Olympic parents on steroids, dude. It was like unbelievable. It's like little league soccer parent all rolled into one and in a little box of a gym. And my point guard is throwing up air balls and he got a technical foul and he's getting rattled, right? And we're down like eight with a couple minutes and he gets a technical foul and I take him out, sit him down. He hasn't been out all year and he's like ready to cry and his dad's freaking out. And I sit him down and I said, I need you to calm down. My point guard, you got to run this team. And if your shot's not falling, you have to impact the game other ways. I said, you're not doing that, John. I go, sit down here, calm down. I'm going to get you back in. I put in a little kid, this little kid who's backup point guard. He plays out of his mind. We come back, tie the game, go into overtime. I actually end up putting my point guard back in overtime. We end up winning that game. And his son ended up playing great when he came back in. We won that game. And for me, it was like this really unbelievable moment with all this pressure. And, you know, I'm coaching by myself and making calls and subbing guys in and out. It's really hard, you know. And I'll never forget the dad pulled me aside outside, never forget, by my car. And he lit me up. He lit me up, like in my face. And I remember thinking to myself, there was a part of me that was like, dude, I want to kill this guy. And another part of me that was in shock. And then there was another part of me that was like, you know what? You did the right thing. And I hadn't coached my whole life. I had literally been coaching club. Even when I was in college, I was always assisting club team. So I had been around it. I had been coaching since I was 18. This was like my first time on my own. But I'd been an assistant. Like I felt good about what I did. I was a point guard. Like And finally, I let him go. He talked about how he stunted his kid's growth. By the way, his kid was so small, he was never growing anyways. I stunted his growth. I killed his confidence. He was never going to be the same. How dare I? He took me to UCLA games. And all I said was, Mr. Carabas, and I hope he's listening. I said, Mr. Carabas, haven't talked to the guy in 25 years. Mr. Carabas, I said, I believe what I did was the right thing. I said, by the way, we won the game. But even if we had lost the game, I said, I really feel in my heart, we did the right thing. And I'll tell you why. I took John out and he responded. Like he understood the moment. Like he understood that he got a technical. I had to take him out. I mean, he was losing it and we were down. And he, the dad, dude, guys, he never talked to me again the rest of the time. You know, probably 6-7 more games. Never talked to me again. So Jackson, sometimes they don't buy it. And now fast forward, you know, 17 years after that, there I am, you know, with the best team in the country trying to win a girls JO championships. And I have my third outside hitter quit. She quit in the middle of the season. And I went and we had to go, me and my buddy, Tim, who I coached with, we had to drive out to Flint Ridge past Pasadena and meet with them at a Starbucks. And we had to not, I mean, we didn't suck on any crow, but we basically had to say, listen, here's how we coach. We need her. We need her because if we want to win this thing with our team, we need her to play. We need her to be there. You can't just roll with two outside hitters. Here's why she's not starting. We'll try to do a better job of getting her in there, but she's a part of this team. The girls like her. You know, she ended up coming back and playing, and we used her in one match that was pretty critical, JOs, but she didn't play much besides that. And, you know, she wasn't happy. Her parents weren't happy. But, you know, to answer your question, like, if they don't buy in, you have to just tell them the truth. You got to tell them the truth, and you got to tell them what you believe in. And you have to say, you know, if you really need them, this is why I need you. This is why I want you. But if it's not for you, then don't do it. Because if it's not for them and they end up, you know, listen, I've had nightmare parent situations. I've had people that I thought were friends, never talk to me again. You know, like, because as soon as they're done with you, they're on to the next thing. They're on to the next coach. They're on to their next job. And you're not benefiting their daughter or their son anymore. So they don't need you. You know, a lot of these guys are CEOs of companies and stuff. They boom, boom, boom. They're on to the next one. And you know what? If they're not going to buy in, as much as it might hurt your team, it's better in the long run. I finally got to a point in my career where I was like, dude, I want to roll with who's ready to go. Yeah. Does it hurt us? Oh, well, then it hurts us, you know? And if they can't understand that you're not just hurting me and your daughter, you're hurting the whole team. I think that a lot of times gets people too. You know, I think if you have that situation with a parent, you know, I think you have to, you know, whatever your team belief is and your team concept and your motto and your beliefs, you got to sell it, man. You got to sell it like you're on the car lot, man. You sell it, sell yourself, sell your vision, sell why the team is important. Sell why you need her or him to stay. Sell why you coach this certain way. This is my system. Here's why. And you know what? They don't want on board. They don't want on board. You know, they can go other places. That's the beauty of it. But be upfront with them, man. Be upfront with them from the get-go. Tell them what they're getting into. Don't promise anything. You know, real quick before you guys go on to the next question, Jane, who I talked about earlier, she was leaving her club, Cal Juniors, and everyone knew. It was like LeBron was going to be a free agent. Everyone knew Jane was leaving Cal Juniors. She went and tried out at Long Beach. She went and tried out at Laguna. She went and tried out at Shaq all the same days. And us at SportCheck, I'll never forget this, like it was yesterday. Her mom, who I loved, Lila, came in after tryouts. We really loved it. It was great. Pulled me and Tim into the side room at Marymount where Billy had to shag balls all the time. Side room and said, do you plan on having, you know, she had this little, you know, Polynesian Hawaiian style. Said, do you plan on having Jane, you know, start and go all the way around? You know, we'll start. And by the way, of course she's going to start. She's best player in the country. And I'll never forget before I could even answer, because Tim and I have always said, we coached 19 years together. We said, we promise that to nobody. We got to stick by that. I'll never forget Tim, as cocky and as confident as can be, you know, Lila, I can't do that. You know, we don't promise, you know, starting positions, because I've never coached Jane. So I have no idea. We have a really good team. I'll tell you this. I think she's going to be a big part of what we do. And she goes, okay, thanks. And she left. She walked out the door. Tim looked at me and he goes, did I just lose us Jane Crimson? And I go, yeah, you might have. We kind of laughed about it. Got a call late that night that she was in. But we were up front with her. I mean, I felt like the minute she asked, I felt like going, yes, she'll never come out for 2 years. Just, yeah. But we didn't do it. We didn't do it. We were honest. So it's kind of cool.
Love the honesty. To kind of go back to, you touched on Kobe and his retirement, mm-hmm. And just want to make sure we hit on a little bit more and maybe just some personal things you've seen firsthand that's made Kobe Kobe. I know we've heard a lot about him, but
he's coming on next week too.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, Johnny. I Kobe can be the most charming guy of all time. He walks into a room, he just commands this respect and this presence. And it could be in the gym at El Segundo where their practice facility is, it can be at Staples, or it can be at the Olympics where I met him in Beijing. And I'll never forget, like, not knowing anything about Kobe personally, just being a fan and covering the team for a couple of years, but never even, I've never covered 06, 07. I never covered the home team. So I would see him and never talk to him. I met him at the Olympics in Beijing. He came to like three volleyball matches to watch Kerry and those guys. And I would always weasel down into where I knew they would be. And I would always take that match off so I could hang with him. And Sinjin would let me in and I would go in there and I would start touching base with him. We started rapping out and he started asking me questions about volleyball. So we formed a little bit of a relationship. So then when I started covering the actual Lakers sideline later that year, he knew who I was. And he's so charming when he wants to be. He's so competitive. And the thing about him, guys, and you can tell by watching that last game and watching him throughout this year, is he's always ready for whatever he's doing. He wants to be so engaged with that. He wants to know, what makes you so great? Why is Roger Federer, why is Jokic so great? Why is Messi the best at what he does? Why is Spielberg so good here? Why is this guy the best storyteller? Because now he wants to tell stories of the production company and all this stuff. I mean, he dives into whatever he's doing. It's maniacal. And, you know, to be the best, you have to make a ton of sacrifices. But there's legendary stories. Like, you know, Luke Walton would tell me that Kobe would, you know, 6 a.m. Luke always said, Kobe never sleeps, dude. He's going to bed at 2 because he's thinking too much. He's up at 4:35. He's in the gym. He's already had a full day before the Lakers would get there at 10. And I always said that puts them on a different level. You know, like when I saw him that last night, there was just something in that look where I think, honest to God, you guys, he went into that game not thinking he would score 60. I don't think he thought, I'm going to take 50 shots. He didn't know what that game was going to bring him. He wanted to compete one more time. He wanted the Jazz to play hard. The Jazz did. The game got going. The players started feeding him. And then he saw that they were within striking distance. And I think he wanted to win that game. I think he wanted to win it so bad, because at the end of the day, that's what I think he was about. Like, he wanted to compete and he wanted to end on a high note. And I'm telling you guys, of all the athletic events I've been a part of, I cannot explain what happened that night. It was magical. All the stars were out. They were standing like it was a game 7 the entire time. Everything had to go perfectly, right? Like, Houston won their game, so the Jazz weren't in the playoffs. The Jazz would have been playing to go to the playoffs, so they automatically had a little bit of a letdown. As well as they played in that first half, like, you know, it wasn't do or die for them, right? So they played their butts off, but it was a meaningless game. The refs let them play in the fourth quarter. Julius Randle was setting screens like a fullback and no calls, right? And Kobe somehow, and this is what I'm getting to my point to answer your original question, he was exhausted. I mean, I talked to Byron Scott late that night, and he said he went to him at the 9-minute mark and the 6-minute mark and said to him, can I get 6 more from you? Can I get 9 more from you? And Kobe looked at him and he goes, I thought the guy was just going to like say no. He was that dead out. And he'd go, yeah, I got you, B. And he'd get up. But the lift that he had on his last 5 shots, he hits his last 5 shots, the 3, the elbow jumpers, the lift, and all of a sudden he was like 24-year-old Kobe again. And I thought to myself, you mother effer, this guy, like James Worthy and I, we were dying. We're like, you gotta be kidding me that this guy's gonna go out like this with the crowd going crazy. He got to 50, then he got to 60, and they win the game. And to me, it was like, you know what? This guy is, say what you will about him. Say he's selfish, say he's maniacal, say he's not a great teammate, say whatever you wanna do. Those young guys on that Laker team learned more in one night about how to play, how to give it your all, and how to be a winner than they learned in 2 years. There's no question about it. They watched him, and they were in awe. I talked to those guys after. They were completely baffled to see a guy in that moment do what he did. Special. So for me, like, he catapults even up even more. You know, he's not Jordan, but he's in that conversation of an all-time great. There's no question about it.
We're going to bring on Mark Sherman, the newest announcer on the AVP.
What's up, Mark?
What's up, Gator?
What's happening, buddy?
Not much. Just hoping I don't get kicked out of outdoor Starbucks when they close in 3 minutes. But I think I'll be good. Yeah, that's a good one. Hey, dude. Yeah, so a couple questions. John told me you were coming on the way back from New Orleans last night, so thought of a couple things. So, yeah, first thing. So when there's so much chaos and craziness going on around you, whether you're in – studio or at a live event, or, you know, at the Lakers game where I sure it was nuts. Like, so when there's that much craziness going and chaos around you, how do you stay focused on your job? Do you sort of take it all in? Do you try to ignore it? Or what do you do?
Well, I feel like you're probably asking this because I know where you've been. People don't realize that when you're doing those intros to the finals or you're calling a match, you know, you have 10 people telling you what to do, right? There's nothing crazier than an AVP event or an international event before you go on, and there's live TV and it's NBC and you have 15 people telling you what to do and you got guys in your ear. It can be pretty frustrating, Mark. And I'll tell you, man, it took me a while to get to a place where, listen, there's a part of me that likes chaos when it's fun chaos. Like, I'm better when I have people around me and we're having fun. But in those moments where I'm going to go on and, you know, light's going to be on and they're saying go and you're like, hey, it's the ABP, you know, listen, those moments, I don't want people freaking out around me. Like, for me, I don't like the negative vibes. If they get me in a bad mood, then I know my performance is going to be bad. And this is just me personally. I need to be like a happy guy. I need to be in a good place and I need to be confident before I do any of that stuff that you've been doing as well. And for me, I just got to a point where I would separate myself. I would always say, oh, I got to go down and get ready. And I would go down to like, dude, even like a porta potty or a player's tent, you know, and just get a moment away from everybody. Because once you get into that arena, everyone's on you, right? So I always needed a few moments to kind of gather my thoughts and hit my bullet points in my head. And I think when it gets in those most hectic moments, you know, I think you have to remain really calm inside, even if you're having fun with it and you're enjoying moments. And I'll give you a perfect example, Mark. My boss, and I don't know if he's ever going to listen to this, but one of my bosses, he was in my ear and he was kind of like lit me up in the pregame show about something. We had a great pregame show and I knew I was going to be doing a stand-up, just me and doing it on camera. It was going to be the biggest one of the night because it was going to be the Emmy reel that we put forward. And he had been pumping me up about it all week, like, dude, the Emmy reel, don't blow it. Make sure you write some cool stuff and, you know, you're ready. And he's kind of heckling me. And I'm like, yeah, great. Well, we get to that commercial break and there's like a 6-minute break before I come on because they were showing a feature before that. And like, he hears me. He's back in the studio and I'm at site. He can see me and he can hear me. And a friend walks by and I'm like, hey, what's up, Beto? And I give him this. And all of a sudden he snaps. Get ready. And he like screams and I'm like, and I come to and I like look at the camera and I'm like starting to feel like a little sweat. And he like lighten me up a little bit. And he's like, I need you focused. And all of a sudden I hear in my ear from my other producer, Gator, you're on in 4 minutes. And I thought to myself, dude, I'm on in 4 minutes and you're lighting me up. And I was thinking to myself, dude, you're the worst coach. I mean, I feel pretty safe that he's not going to hear this. I was thinking to myself, you would be a horrible coach, dude. You completely, that was like opposite of what Phil Jackson would do. You went completely ballistic and yelled at me before the biggest segment for no reason. And I was like kind of pissed, Mark, for like, I got to be honest with you. I was just telling my wife this. I was pissed for like probably 30 seconds, 45 seconds, where I was a little rattled. And here I am, like, I've done this a million times, yet I was kind of like, and dude, thank God I had the time. But after about 30 seconds, I thought to myself, dude, who cares? Like, it's live TV. He's stressed. I don't know what's going on back in the studio. Everyone's freaked out. You can't hear him anymore. Like, get yourself together. Let's enjoy this moment. And I looked over and like, Rob was always paying attention. He's laughing at something. I'm like, dude, look where you are, dude. Pinch yourself, dude. You're a lifetime Laker fan that's on the floor at Staples about to do a hit on Kobe Bryant. Are you kidding me? So it's funny, Mark. I then kind of like became calm and had like a little laugh of myself. Like, I feel like when I can laugh, I'm always really calm. I had a little laugh, a little moment, went into the camera and it went great. But I remember for those 30 seconds, I was pissed, dude. And I wanted to go to him. I almost started a little argument with him. Like, why would you do that? Because deep down, I still want to know why he did that. I feel like if I go into work tomorrow, I'm going to ask him. This is kind of pissing me off now that I think about it. But, you know, you're always going to have those guys, Mark, especially doing NBC leads or whatever. You know, you're going to have people in your ear. You're going to have panic moments, you know, especially out on the beach where so many things can go wrong with satellites and all that stuff. And you just got to be ready for it when it happens, embrace it, enjoy it. And at the end of the day, dude, you're entertaining, right? Like, be yourself and have fun with it. And everyone else is going to go off your vibe. And if you're digging it and you're going nuts and you're having a good time, dude, they're going to love it too. You know, I've also gone on air and, you know, had a poopy diaper face and done something. And at the end of the day, I think to myself, dude, the person at home doesn't know you're in a bad mood. Like,
right.
Who cares if you don't feel well or if you're upset with something? You're the one who comes across, you know, unprofessional. You're the one that comes across like you have a poopy diaper. Like, no one else cares, dude. They have no idea at home that my boss just yelled at me. So I've had to learn through the years, and it's not easy, but I've had to learn that, you know, once the light's on, dude, you got to get to a good place and you worry about that stuff later. And you know what, Mark, I'll tell you, 9 times out of 10, by the time you get off the air, the time you're done with the thing, you don't even remember what happened anyways.
Thanks, Peter.
Bye, buddy.
It's always nice having a Northridge guy on the microphone.
It's not an easy job, right?
Oh, gosh. Especially when, like, Mayer's getting waxed and it's a boring final. Like, what do you think?
Too many Northridge guys.
Speaking of which, listener Andrew Fuller asks, what players would be on Northridge Volleyball's Mount Rushmore?
First of all, I love Andrew Fuller. Let's just get that out there. But, okay, Coley Kyman for sure. Matt Unger for sure. Bob Samuelson for sure. And, man, Billy, is there anybody over the last 15 to 20? I'm trying to think of some new guys that might.
I can't think of anybody good. Like, those, anybody. No one like that Chad, I can see.
Like Chad Strickland was an All-American, but he's not. He's not. Yeah. Nils. Besides Nils, maybe? Well, I mean,
Who?
No, honestly, what do you guys think? I mean, when you guys think of the greats, you think of probably Coley for sure.
Those three.
Yeah, you got to think of Sammy. Sammy was the best up to his time. And then Matt and Coley for sure. You know, like Lynch, Kaufman, Strickland. You know, there's some great players. You know, Axel Hagar was pretty damn good, won a bronze medal at the Olympics. But was he Mount Rushmore good? That's a tough one.
Listener Tom Black asks, what made Geeter one of the greatest PGs in Crespi Athletics history? Hashtag never picked in the backcourt.
Tom Black and I, this is a true story. We went to school together from grades 1 all the way through 12. He was 2 years behind me. I watched Tom blossom into like a unbelievable stud athlete / model. I don't know how it happened. It happened overnight. Too bad he went to UCSD. Could have been a great matador. But, you know, it's funny he says that. I got picked in a summer league game my senior year by a kid named Charlie Crow, who used to go to Crespi, who can never sniff my jock. He never could start. He transferred to El Camino. He actually picked me in a summer league game. And I said to myself, that ain't happening. And the entire regular season through the CIF playoffs, I never got picked as a point guard my senior year. That is true, Tommy. You know it, buddy.
A different Kevin Lynch asks, what succeeds more, calmness under pressure, boring Mayer style, or like crazy fire like Patterson?
Well, listen, it's whatever works for that individual. Like I think if John Mayer started acting like Casey Patterson, some might say he's rattled or might not be his game. There might be moments where he might show a little extra passion. Todd Rogers played a lot like John Mayer. I mean, they're both very, very steady and they play their game and it's not their personality to be out there yelling and screaming and doing backflips. They're at their best when they're really calm. Believe me, the fire is inside John Mayer and Todd Rogers. I mean, they're just as competitive as anybody who's out there screaming. Even more, I mean, John won the national championship and played every position besides middle at Pepperdine. The guy's as competitive as can be. He just shows it a different way. And when he's in pressure situations, he knows he's getting served. He delivers and he's steady. Casey Patterson is an entertainer type of guy that loves that moment. When Casey's not popping and locking and doing his thing, guess what? He's not winning. So when he's popping and locking, be scared if you're the opponent, because that's when he's never felt better. So it's whatever makes you you. Whenever you're you in that moment, that's the best guy you got to be under pressure. Don't try to be anybody else under pressure. If you want to act a different way, you're taking yourself out of your game. You're getting in your own head.
Great stuff. Well, Gee, thanks so much for all the time and all the knowledge and all the great stories. There's so much, not just funny stuff, but just good nuggets in there that I think people can really appreciate. And I think a bigger thank you for all you've done for our sport. You know, a lot of players have come and gone since I've played and they get forgotten pretty quickly, but yeah. You're a guy that never, like, people are always talking about.
And, I appreciate them.
And just such a lasting impact on our game, and just appreciate all you've done. And everyone misses you and always look forward to seeing you. I think you'll be at Long Beach again.
Yeah, I'll be at Long Beach. I would love to get down to Huntington to watch you guys play a little bit, and I'll definitely be at a couple AVPs when I can. And, you know, not to get too sentimental, but I really appreciate you guys, you three especially. You know, I've always held in high regard. I got a nice little place in my heart for you three. You guys are great dudes. I love your wives. And I appreciate what you guys do for volleyball and stuff, man, as well. And for me, to be honest with you, Johnny, Nils, and Billy, I love the sport. And, like, if there's a way I can still be involved and still be around it, I will. I miss coaching. Hopefully my daughters, you know, one day want to play and, you know, I can coach them up. But I just always want to be in tune to the sport. I always want to help it. You know, for me, like I even said, I always thought I got a lot more credit than I deserve. I was just a little part of it and I loved it. And I always want to be a little part of it. And I'm not, I never want to be, and I'm never going to be Oscar Robinson, those older guys who say Steph Curry's like wouldn't have lasted in their day. Dude, the game is getting better. Everything's getting better about it. I'm watching that game on TV and it looks good. And, you know, it's not about the glory days, man. The glory days are still ahead of us. So you guys keep doing it. Your passion for the game. You guys are still out there playing the sport we love, man. That's, you know, that's why I'm out there playing fours all the time with my boys, dude. I love it.
Gator, you fire me up. I think I'm going to go I'm gonna lift some weights right now.
You right, man.
Boys. All right, fellas. Thanks, later. Say hi to the wives.
Next week will be our 50th episode of Coach Your Brains Out. We'll discuss what we've learned over the past year of doing the podcast and some of the changes we've made as both players and coaches, plus some highlights from our first 49 episodes. We have a lot of exciting things planned moving forward, so thank you for listening and spreading the word. Please subscribe on iTunes to get all our episodes and follow us on Twitter and our Facebook page.